The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larissa Biggers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is poetry. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the poems of Mary Oliver. Mary Oliver was born on September 10, 1935, in Maple Heights, Ohio. There she found solace in nature during a difficult childhood. As a teenager, she lived briefly in the home of Edna St. Vincent Millay in New York, where she helped the family sort through the papers the poet left behind after her death. In the mid-1950s, Oliver attended both Ohio State University and Vassar College, though she did not receive a degree from either institution. Her poetry, which was known for its accessibility, clear language reflected her deep connection to the natural world. During her career, she published over 15 collections of poetry and won a Pulitzer Prize for American Primitive and a National Book Award, among numerous other awards. She had died in 2019 in Florida. The first Mary Oliver poem I'm going to read is called Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. The Uses of Sorrow. Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this, too, was a gift. How I Go to the Woods. Ordinarily, I go to the woods alone, with not a single friend, for they are all smilers and talkers, and therefore unsuitable. I don't really want to be witnessed talking to the catbirds or hugging the black old oak tree. I have my way of praying, as you, no doubt, have yours. Besides, when I'm alone, I can become invisible. I can sit on the top of a dune as motionless as an uprise of trees until the foxes run by unconcerned. I can hear the almost unhearable sounds of the roses singing. If you have ever gone into the woods with me, I must love you very much. The Swan. Did you, too, see it, drifting all night on the Black River? Did you see it in the morning, rising into the silvery air, an armful of white blossoms, a perfect commotion of silk and linen as it leaned into the bondage of its wings, a snowbank, a bank of lilies, biting the air with its black beak? Did you hear it, fluting and whistling, a shrill, dark music like the rain pelting the trees, like a waterfall knifing down the black ledges? And did you see it finally, just under the clouds, a white cross streaming across the sky, its feet like black leaves, its wings like the stretching light of the river? And did you feel it in your heart, how it pertained to everything? And have you too finally figured out what beauty is for? And have you changed your life? Praying. It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention, then patch a few words together and don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but the doorway into thanks and a silence in which another voice may speak. This next Mary Oliver poem, I believe, is untitled. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it, to hold it against your bones. Pardon me, let me start over with this untitled poem. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and, when the time comes, to let it go, to let it go. Invitation. Oh, do you have time to linger just for a little while out of your busy and very important day for the goldfinches that have gathered in a field of thistles for a musical battle to see who can sing the highest note or the lowest or the most expressive of mirth or the most tender? Their strong, blunt beaks drink the air as they strive melodiously, not for your sake and not for mine, and not for the sake of winning, but for sheer delight and gratitude. Believe us, they say, it is a serious thing just to be alive on this fresh morning in the broken world. I beg you, do not walk by without pausing to attend to this rather ridiculous performance. It could mean something. It could mean everything. It could be what Rilke meant when he wrote, "You must change your life." The summer day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is your plan to do? What is your plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Do stones feel? Do stones feel? Do they love their life? Or is it their patience? Or does their patience drown out everything else? When I walk on the beach, I gather a few white ones, dark ones, the multiple colors. Don't worry, I say. I'll bring you back. And I do. Is it the tree as it rises, delighted with its many branches, each one like a poem? Are the clouds glad to unburden their bundles of rain? Most of the world says no. No, it's not possible. I refuse to think to such a conclusion. Too terrible it would be to be wrong. The chance to love everything. All summer, I made friends with the creatures nearby. They flowed through the fields and under the tent walls, or padded through the door, grinning through their many teeth, looking for seeds, suet, sugar, muttering and humming, opening the bread box, happiest when there was milk and music. But once in the night I heard a sound outside the door. The canvas bulged slightly. Something was pressing inward at eye level. I watched, trembling, sure I had heard the click of claws, the smack of lips outside my gauzy house. I imagined the red eyes, the broad tongue, the enormous lap. Would it be friendly, too? Fear defeated me, and yet, not in faith and not in madness, but with the courage I thought my dream deserved, I stepped outside. It was gone. Then I whirled at the sound of some shambling tonnage. Did I see a black haunch slipping back through the trees? Did I see the moonlight shining on it? Did I actually reach out my arms toward it, toward paradise falling like the fading of the dearest, wildest hope? The darkest heart of the story Did I actually reach out my arms toward it, toward paradise falling like the fading of the dearest, wildest hope, the dark heart of the story that is all the reason for its telling? The journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice through the whole house, shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old tug at your ankles. "Mend my life," each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Except for the body. Except for the body of someone you love, including all its expressions in privacy and in public. Trees, I think, are the most beautiful forms of the earth. Though, admittedly, if this were a contest, the trees would come in an extremely distant second. The storm. Now through the white orchard, my little dog romps, breaking the new snow with wild feet. Running there, excited, hardly able to stop, he leaps, he spins until the white snow is written upon in large, exuberant letters, a long sentence expressing the pleasure of the body in this world. Oh, I could not have said it better. At Great Pond. At Great Pond, the sun, rising, scrapes his orange breast on the thick pines, and down tumble a few orange feathers into the dark water. On the far shore, a white bird is standing like a white candle, or a man, in the distance, in the clasp of some meditation, while all around me the lilies are breaking open again from the black cave of the night. Later, I will consider what I have seen, what it could signify, what words of adoration I might make of it. And to do this, I will go indoors to my desk, I will sit in my chair, I will look back into the lost morning in which I am moving now, like a swimmer, so smoothly, so peacefully. I am almost a lily, almost the bird vanishing over the water on its sleeves of night. Daisies. It is possible, I suppose, that sometime we will learn everything there is to learn. What the world is, for example, and what it means. I think this as I am crossing from one field to another in summer, and the mockingbird is mocking me as one who either knows enough already or who knows enough to be perfectly content not knowing. Song being born of quest, he knows this. He must turn silent, were he suddenly assaulted with answers. Instead, oh, hear his wild, caustic, tender warbling ceaselessly unanswered. At my feet, the white-petaled daisies display the small suns of their centerpiece. There, if you don't mind my saying so, hearts. Of course, I could be wrong. Perhaps their hearts are pale and narrow and hidden in the root. What do I know? But this, it is heaven itself to take what is given, to see what is plain, what the sun lights up willingly. For example, I think this as I reach down, not to pick, but merely to touch the suitability of the field for the daisies, and the daisies for the field. Starlings in winter. Chunky and noisy, but with stars in their black feathers, they spring from the telephone wire, and instantly they are acrobats in the freezing wind. And now, in the theater of air, they swing over bridges, dipping and rising. They float like one stippled star that opens, becomes for a moment fragmented, then closes again. And you watch, and you try, but you simply can't imagine how they do it, with no articulated instruction, no pause, only the silent confirmation that they are this notable thing, this wheel of many parts that can rise and spin over and over again, full of gorgeous life. Ah, world, what lessons you prepare for us, even in the leafless winter. Even in the ashy city, I am thinking now of grief and getting past it. I feel my boots trying to leave the ground. I feel my heart pumping hard. I want to think again of dangerous and noble things. I want to be light and frolicsome. I want to be improbable, beautiful. I want to be improbable, beautiful, and afraid of nothing, as though I had wings. A dream of trees. There is a thing in me that dreamed of trees, a quiet house, some green and modest acres, a little way from every troubling town, a little way from factories, schools, laments. I would have time, I thought, and time to spare with only streams and birds for company to build out of my life a few wild stanzas. And then it came to me that so was death a little way away from everywhere. There's a thing in me that still dreams of trees, but let it go. Homesick for moderation, half the world's artists shrink or fall away. If any find solution, let him tell it. Meanwhile, I bend my heart towards lamentation, where, as the times implore our true involvement, the blades of every crisis point the way. I would it were so, but so it is. Whoever made music of a mild day? When death comes. When death comes like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut, when death comes like the measles pox, when death comes like an iceberg between the shoulder blades, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, what is it going to be like, that cottage of darkness? And therefore, I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood, and I look upon time as no more than an idea, and I consider eternity as another possibility, and I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy and as singular, and each name a comfortable music in the mouth, tending, as all music does, toward silence, and each body a line of courage and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say my life was a bride married to amazement. I was a bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. Dogfish. Some kind of relaxed and beautiful thing kept flickering in with the tide and looking around, black as a fisherman's boot with a white belly. If you ask for a picture, I would have to draw a smile under perfectly round eyes and above the chin, which was rough as a thousand sharpened nails. And you know what a smile means, don't you? I wanted the past to go away. I wanted to leave it like another country. I wanted my life to close and open like a hinge, like a wing, like the part of a song where it falls down over the rocks, an explosion, a discovery. I wanted to hurry into the work of my life. I wanted to know whoever I was alive for a little. It was evening and no longer summer. Three small fish, I don't know what they were, huddled in the highest ripples as it came swimming in again, effortless, the whole body one gesture, one black sleeve that could fit easily around the bodies of three small fish. Also, I wanted to be able to love, and we all know how that one goes, don't we? Slowly, the dogfish tore open the soft basins of water. You don't want to hear the story of my life, and anyway, I don't want to tell it. I want to listen to the enormous waterfalls of the sun. And anyway, it's the same old story, a few people just trying one way or another to survive. Mostly, I want to be kind, and nobody, of course, is kind or mean for a simple reason. And nobody gets out of it having to swim through the fires to stay in this world. And look, 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 I think those little fish better wake up and dash themselves away from the hopeless future that is bulging toward them. And probably, if they don't waste time looking for an easier world, they can do it. Good morning. 1. Hello, Wren, is the first thing I say. "Where did you come from, appearing so sudden and cheerful in the privet, which, by the way, has decided to decorate itself in so many white blossoms?" 2. Paula is coming to visit. Paulus, the dancer, the potter, who is just beginning his 80th decade, who walks without shoes in the woods because his feet, he says, ask to be in touch with the earth. Paulus, who, when he says my poems, sometimes changes them a little, according to the occasion or his own feelings. "Okay," I say. 3. Stay young, always, in the theater of your mind. 4. Bless the notebook that I always carry in my pocket, and the pen. Bless the words with which I try to say what I see, think, or feel, with gratitude for the grace of the earth, the expected and the exception, both, for all the hours I have been given to be in this world. 5. The multiplicity of forms, the hummingbird, the fox, the raven, the sparrowhawk, the otter, the dragonfly, the water lily, and on, it must be a great disappointment to God if we are not dazzled at least 10 times a day. 6. Slowly the morning climbs toward the day. As for the poem, not this poem, but any poem, do you feel its sting? Do you feel its hope, its entrance to a community? Do you feel its hand in your hand? 7. But perhaps you're still sleeping. I could wake you with a touch or a kiss. But so could I shake the petals from the wild rose which blossoms so silently and perfectly, and I do not. Just as the calendar begins to say summer. I went out of the schoolhouse fast, and through the gardens into the woods, and spent all summer forgetting what I'd been taught, 2 times 2 and diligence and so forth, how to be modest and useful, and how to succeed and so forth, machines and oil and plastic and money, and so forth. By fall, I had healed somewhat, but was summoned back to the chalky rooms and the desk to sit and remember the way the river kept rolling its pebbles, the way the wild wrens sang, though they hadn't a penny in the bank, the way the flowers were dressed in nothing but light. Song for Autumn. Don't you remember the leaves dream now? How comfortable it will be to touch the earth instead of the nothingness of air and the endless freshets of wind? And don't you think the trees, especially those with mossy hollows, are beginning to look for the birds that will come, 6, a dozen, to sleep inside their bodies? And don't you hear the goldenrod whispering goodbye, the everlasting being crowned with the first tuffets of snow? The pond stiffens, and the white field over which the fox runs so quickly brings out its long blue shadows. The wind wags its many tails, and, in the evening, the piled firewood shifts a little, longing to be on its way. The Humpbacks. There is all around us this country of original fire. You know what I mean. The sky, after all, stops at nothing, so something has to be holding our bodies in its rich and timeless staples, or else we would fly away. Off Stellwagen, off the Cape, the humpbacks rise. Carrying their tonnage of barnacles and joy, they leap through the water. They nuzzle back under it, like children at play. They sing, too, and not for any reason you can imagine. 3 of them rise to the surface near the bow of the boat, then dive deeply, their huge scarred flukes tipped to the air. We wait, not knowing just where it will happen. Suddenly they smash through the surface. Someone begins shouting for joy, and you realize it is yourself as they surge upward, and you see for the first time how huge they are as they breach and dive and breach again through the shining blue flowers of the spilt water. And you see them for some unbelievable part of a moment against the sky, like nothing you'd ever imagined, like the myth of the fifth morning galloping out of darkness, pouring heavenward, spinning. Then they crash back under those black silks, and we all fall back together into that wet fire. You know what I mean? I know a captain who has seen them playing with seaweed, swimming through the green islands, tossing the slippery branches into the air. I know a whale that will come to the boat whenever she can and nudge it gently along the bow with her flipper. I know several lives worth living. Listen, whatever it is you try to do with your life, nothing will ever dazzle you like the dreams of your body, its spirit longing to fly, while the dead weight bones toss their dark mane and hurry back to into the fields of glittering fire, where everything, even the great whale, throbs with song. The fish. The first fish I ever caught would not lie down quiet in the pail, but flailed and sucked at the burning amazement of the air and died in the slow pouring off of rainbows. Later, I opened his body and separated the flesh from the bones and ate him. Now the sea is in me. I am the fish. The fish glitters in me. We are risen, tangled together, certain to fall back in the sea. Out of pain and pain and more pain, we feed this feverish plot. We are nourished by the mystery. Why I wake early. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning and spread it over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories and into the windows of even the miserable and crotchety, best preacher that ever was, dear star, that just happens to be where you are in the universe, to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Watch now how I start the day in happiness, in kindness. Sometimes. 1. Something came up out of the dark. It wasn't anything I'd ever seen before. It wasn't an animal or a flower, unless it was both. Something came up out of the water, a head the size of a cat but muddy and without ears. I didn't know what God is. I don't know what God is. I don't know what death is. But I believe they have between them some fervent and necessary arrangement. 2. Sometimes melancholy leaves me breathless. 3. Later, I was in a field full of sunflowers. I was feeling the head of midsummer. I was thinking of the sweet electric drowse of creation when it began to break. In the west, clouds gathered, thunderheads. In an hour, the sky was filled with them. In an hour, the sky was filled with the sweetness of rain and the blast of lightning, followed by the deep bells of thunder. Water from the heavens, electricity from the source, both of them mad to create something, the lightning brighter than any flower, the thunder without a drowsy bone in its body. 4. Instructions for living a life. Pay attention. Be astonished. Tell about it. 5. Two or three times in my life I discovered love. Each time it seemed to solve everything. Each time it solved a great many things, but not everything. Yet left me grateful, as if it had indeed and thoroughly solved everything. 6. God, rest in my heart and fortify me. Take away my hunger for answers. Let the hours play upon my body, like the hands of my beloved. Let the cat head appear again, the smallest of your mysteries, some wild cousin of my own bloody probability, some cousin of my own wild blood, probably, in the black dinner bowl of the pond.